Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Joe Hackman on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight I'm going to be interviewing Chris Major of the Hayward Youth Academy. And I actually met Chris through Leadership San Ramon Valley, a group that we mutually are a part of this year, the 2010 class, the best class ever. And Hayward Youth Academy is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. And I'm going to let really leave a lot of the explanation to Chris, but I want to make sure he's there. Chris, are you on the air?
Joe, I definitely am, and thank you very much for having me this evening.
Hey, my pleasure. So really excited to have you on the program. You have a lot of energy, and I'm really looking forward to learning more about what got you involved in sort of what the genesis of HYA was and how you got to where you are today. So tell me a little bit about what made you start doing the HYA program here.
Well, I'll tell you what, Hayward Youth Academy was a program. It was kind of a labor of love from many years of experience. So it's kind of been a blending, if you will, a background in business, a background in insurance, and a background in education, and what I believe and what my vision is of how we can be more productive with kids. And so at Hayward Youth Academy, vision was that we were here to support parents and families within the San Francisco Bay Area, and we do it through our after-school programming and also in an opportunity to give kids what we call, and piggybacking a little bit off of St. Mary's College's phrase, inspiring wonder, by helping kids see, especially first-generation families, see an opportunity that, you know, we can be something better and greater than what we envision ourselves in our own community. Regardless of where we come from or our background, we start with parents supporting their children and creating a communication outlet through the school system. So, you know, we are now embarking in Hayward on what we call our chess and Scrabble programming and also a tutoring program at Bowman Elementary, and we're very pleased to show that we have like 65 kids in the last 20 weeks that have signed up for our program. So that's inspiring us as well.
That's great. So when did you officially start and form the academy? Were you involved with the formation, or did you get involved after the fact?
Well, no, I am the sole owner. I'm president, CEO. It was my brainchild, if you will. We looked at, and we've scaled back a little bit in terms of, you know, over the last 5 years, we had a very, very big platform that we were trying to fill. And we realized that in terms of just being a smaller operation, we're really goal setting at about 125 kids that we can work with on a yearly basis. We can outreach to about 1,000 kids that we're bringing to St. Mary's College. But we started 5 years ago, and we started with the notion that we're going to try to provide services to the community, but we really didn't have an idea or a model of how we were going to try to, if you will, you know, it's one thing to have a program, Joe, where you go out and you say, you know, we have this idea. But the idea is only as good as the results, and we're very results-oriented. So we chose a program that would say, how do we transform young people into self-motivating themselves and trying to create a culture, if you will, within the South Hayward community that says we can have greater, I guess, expectations for our children other than saying it's important to get a grade. We needed to try to provide more value added to that. So then the last 2 years, we started out with some of the local athletes of the college at St. Mary's. We brought them into the community to speak to kids specifically within the communities that we were trying to target, like Bowman and South Hayward. And then we took the kids to the college themselves and provided college tours. We were providing a dinner for the kids on February 6th. And then we provide and link up motivational speakers to kids that hopefully get them that when they come back to Hayward or whatever community that we're bringing to St. Mary's, that they understand that, you know what, this is the reason why we're doing what we're doing. It's not just an isolated window, if you will, of a world that we never see what's going on beyond our walls.
So it kind of gives them a vision beyond their day-to-day life and what they see. And I can see particularly with at-risk youth, that could be particularly important, sort of providing them with hope, looking forward, giving them some direction, some vision. And certainly, chess is a competitive game. How does that play? How does that program work?
Well, you know, one of the things we do is we look to model, you know, critical thinking. And we were trying to find a program. There's a lot of great reading programs, decoding programs, programs that go specifically to word identification, as well as other types of a developmental process that it comes to the reading and critical thinking programs of learning. But one of the things we found with chess is that there's a definite learning curve each week, that, and it's a very complicated game. It's not, you know, so to speak, not to offend any of the checker players out there, it's not checkers. And it does create an environment where there's a competition based on each individual's, I guess, grasp of the concept of chess or the strategic moves or how well they want to progress within the game. So we use chess as a vehicle every day of kids. We've been running now for 25 weeks, one day a week. We have two chess programs. And kids keep coming back to learn more critical thinking skills regarding the game of chess. And chess being a game of kings, there's so much history involved. It does transform into other subject matters that we use. But one of our main goals is to create an environment that says each week you can come in, take instruction of about 15 to 20 minutes on a new process of the game, whether it's the end game, the middle game, a closing part of the game, or just one of the technical parts of a strategic component of the game. We give that instruction for 15 minutes. And then what we do after that is we sit them down and we have rankings in our program. So we do definitely use a component of competition. And as the kids come back each week, I believe that they learn more about structure of learning, the fact that there is time management involved, that it does take time to progress, and it also takes a certain sense of outside investment to work as well if you're going to get better.
Very good. So you also mentioned, so now the elementary program, is that also, that's also a chess-type program, or...?
Yeah, what we like to do is we like to start the kids out from 4th through 6th grade. We're finding that that's working as best for us. There is no limit in terms of where we believe a young person can start. But one of the things I think that's important for us to get out in our message really is that we really are looking to change the expectations and the culture of learning. Many times after-school programs are engaged in and a lot of running around or playing games and this and that. I think you do teach the process of learning and that there is a time element involved. I think many kids, especially in this technological world, the attention span for games is kind of waning. And I think we're kind of coming back to a full circle where sitting down, especially in this era of a tough economy, where family games and family structure, whether it be dinner and a whole mosaic of those older cultural values, if you will, are kind of coming back to families. And I think one of the things, as we say, we talked earlier about bridging the communication gap between parents and their children. One of the things we do as well, we find, is that many of the kids go home now and are teaching their parents how to play chess. And if many people believe it's chess changing the world, well, it may not be changing the world, but I can tell you one thing. It does change the ability for students to communicate with their parents. And I truly believe that is one of the number one and one of the most fundamental things that we have to instill in the home that doesn't take $1 million or $10 million of educational funding. To be able to get their parents to be invested into their children's homework or their chess or their Scrabble, and we've instituted Scrabble. We'll be in our third week this week in Scrabble. We are now starting to find that it's a way for children. You know, if they say, you know, in the good book, you know, a child shall lead them. To engage their parents, who are obviously, and we know the economy's changed. We know many of the parents. We're not one of those nonprofits that don't see the reality of what it's like to be a parent out there. But we are trying to find some window, if you will, of communication that kind of opens the door for parents to say, okay, this is a fun way to invest my evening, to sit down as a family, to engage in Scrabble, to have that dictionary out, to find out what that homework's about. And that is just as well as a family activity as strong as any other. As well as throwing a VCR or a DVD or playing another game, if you will. And I think there's a lot of that isolation that goes on in families today. So we do look at the whole sociological development of families when we start putting these programs together.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. You know, yesterday, my son had been a little uncooperative with some of his responsibilities. He's four, so I mean, this is somewhat to be expected, you know?
Yeah.
We don't want to place too high expectations, but we want to place high enough expectations to make sure that he understands that he has to be responsible. But we generally let him watch a little TV after dinner, and he had lost that privilege yesterday. And what was funny is we busted out his Legos that he got for Christmas. And, you know, he and I started sort of tinkering around a little bit, and we made some little trucks, and then he brought them to my wife, and she came into the room, and then before you knew it, the whole family was just sitting around the table building with Legos.
And no TV. Sort of,
and no TV, and it was sort of, I sat there and I thought, wow, you know, this is, you know, what a difference. Because normally, you know, of course my wife has been working hard all day, you know, taking care of my son, and I've been working hard at, you know, what I do at my desk, at, you know, working and what have you, and all of a sudden now we're all there together because my son got in trouble, but it was sort of like it reminded me of the importance of that time. And it's not like we don't spend time together, but it's just this was more meaningful, so I could see playing chess being really a good thing.
And I'll tell you one thing, you know, you talk about motivation, you know. I think we find our motivation everywhere. Yeah, and I think that's a great story, Joe. I think, you know, as we say, a child shall lead them, you know. And, you know, without going all in depth of what occurred, you know, whatever reason why he lost his privilege or what the reason was, what it did do was give him the quality time at four in that individual time that's so important because we do become so isolated. So, one, and that's what we talk about as a parent. You know, there is no – I think this is very important, a show like this where you do reach – you know, the working class parent who might be at his computer or who's at his, you know, blog or his tweet or whatever. I'm one of those simple guys still at the Metro. You're going to help me get into that next world. But for that parent who's out there into the cyberspace world, who's listening to your show, who gets isolated from their child, even though they're in the home in their presence. See, that's a whole other world we talk about now, that the old days, the dad would be out, and he'd be out working all day long, and he'd come home late, and nobody'd really see him. But in today's world, we may be home and still feel isolated from our children and our families. And so we do need to create a critical time, even though, well, I'm home with my kid and my wife's at home. We both work out of the house. But working out of the house and being in a home are two different stories. So I think one of the things that you found for yourself and your family is that there's a critical point each day and each week where we do not have any cyberspace on, that we get back to the blend of both worlds. And I don't think you throw one without the other. I don't think we can go back into the 1930s, you know, where we were still, you know, listening to teacups for phone calls. But I think there is a way that we do look at that human experience, that human communication. And I think that was one of the things that, you know, as we talk about, that's very, very important. And the quality of time. You might be able to help your child with the homework, but if the TV's on, who you're competing with that child's interest with something of a visual nature. So I applaud you on that. That's one thing we teach parents. There is no guilt and shame over forgetting or not. You know, it's just remembering to come back to a certain base or a certain platform where each of the family members has equal footing and each equal say. And that's very important. So that's a good gig, very much so.
Now, earlier you mentioned St. Mary's, and I know you attended St. Mary's, and I knew a little bit about your story, but I think it might be relevant to share with everyone sort of where you sort of found I'll let you explain it, but your story, tell us your story about going to college and where you were at and how it ended up happening.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I'll say this, it was probably from 1983 until probably 2006, if you will, 2004, maybe 21 years. College was just, you know, it was on my diploma, and it was on my wall. You know, that was St. Mary's College was a place that I played baseball. I was recruited out of Moreau Catholic High School by a gentleman, Miles McAfee, who were celebrating an honor for him on February 21st, where they're retiring his number. He was a gentleman who found me playing a baseball game March of my senior year at Moreau, and I had no real idea of going to college. I really wanted to go to college, and I was senior class president. I had a lot of the things that many thought were, you know, what you would need to get to college. My grades were adequate, but no real vehicle or someone to notice me. And I think that's why I think we have a passion for finding kids who are B-minus, B students, but really have that driving, you know, I guess self-determination or motivation inside that if they were given an opportunity, they will take it. And I had an opportunity to go to college with Miles McAfee's support and the high potential program at St. Mary's College, and Tom Brown and Nate Carroll, they provided a way for me to get to St. Mary's, and 4 years later I had a business degree, and it wasn't until, like I say, about 21 years later that it kind of dawned on me, after going through life's ups and downs and the changes, and realizing that, you know, regardless of where my life was going or where it was heading, there was someone at that point, as my friend Kim Wilson indicated. He stated the fact that somebody helped me pay the toll gate, and they were there for me to help me get to that next level. And that's something that I think it just kind of transcended about 2005. And when I saw the situation going on in Katrina, I think that was the night I sat down and I wrote all of my website, you know, at Hayward Youth Academy. And that was the beginning of really understanding that, you know, if we really don't get out and do something, we're going to lose a whole culture, generation of kids, not just African-American kids. That was basically the focal point, but just middle-class, working-class kids. And we're seeing it today, Joe. You see the prices of state education going up and all of the changes that they're doing. And a lot of that is separating class. And it makes it harder and harder for kids to get to whatever we believe is that brass ring, whether it be the college degree, or if you don't believe that college is for everyone, you have to believe that education and higher education is for everyone. And whether you're reading at a sixth grade level and as a sophomore in high school, your goal would be able to read at a high school level by 25. So we have to believe that education is something that's attainable for all kids. And as I got older, I started believing more in what the LaSallian tradition at St. Mary's was doing. You know, we talk about quality education, inclusive community, social justice, respect in the faith of God. And these are really principles that we hold dear at St. Mary's. And before you knew it, as I started reaching out to the college more to kind of honor some of the people that helped honor me, you know, who helped get me to where I was, Miles McAfee, Tom Brown, I found an opportunity to bring 1,000 kids a year to St. Mary's and show them the campus and give them a different feel. And it works. I mean, we're not talking about every kid's going to go to college. I mean, I don't think we're not unrealistic. But we do believe that maybe that kid who was going to drop out, who was first-generation Latino male, who may not have finished high school statistically, maybe by the time he's sixth or seventh grade, if he has a visit, he says, you know what, I'm going to stay in school my sophomore year, and maybe we create a better citizen, and maybe he goes out and has a family, and his son gets out of high school, maybe goes to junior college. And that's the kind of track that we look at in a realistic way, and we need support to do that. We have a lot of kids that we work with who we believe that say, hey, this is a generation of kids who's going to better themselves and hopefully will foster a better generation as they go forward. So that's kind of where we are today. So that's kind of that's my passion. That's what I'll do. And for me to do that, I know I need 10 to 15 years. You know, I need 10 years in one school to change the culture and attitude. By the time they walk into kindergarten, their goal is not to finish eighth grade. Their goal is to finish college. And that every kid starts out with that attitude. And that is kind of, you know, when we're talking about Hayward and the culture, that's what we're trying to start. And it's starting fresh. And I had a very nice meeting with a city council person prospect today, Sarah Lehman. She seemed to be very supportive at the city, acknowledging the fact. I said, the cities can do more. I know the city and the school boards fight all the time. You know, we got all that little political game going on, especially in Hayward. But I said, one of the things that we really need to nurture, I think, is the fact that the city needs to support those in the community that are doing the job in the local community, your principals and all of those individuals down at your middle school and the volunteers. And I think if the city were to have a page where they supported volunteerism and supported all the good things that are happening in their school, you know, like in your community, San Ramon, there should be something going on for Omar Samhan. I mean, that kid is doing great things at St. Mary's, and he's a product of the San Ramon Valley School District. And at this point, I don't see anybody really saying, hey, Omar Samhan was a young man who came out of that district who really has taken every opportunity that he's been given at St. Mary's, and he's flourishing at the highest level at Division I basketball, on and off the court. And we appreciate this young man because he's come down and talked to our chess kids. He's gone out and made visits to St. Leo's in Oakland, to kids in Tracy. He's helped with the YMCA down in San Ramon. So this is a young man that I believe, like, locally right there in your community, that's Omar Samhan, makes a big difference in the way that young people see their opportunity. And this is what we're trying to do, connect college kids more locally with kids. and not make it believe that this is such a mystifying, you know, situation where we have to mystify what success is. Success is trying to make it work every day.
So now you mentioned that you know, obviously you need our support. What are the avenues of support? What can people do? I mean, obviously one thing they can do is with any nonprofit is always donate money. Another is donating time. Give me a feel for what your needs are, what your immediate needs are, and where those needs are being met and where you need the help the most.
Well, right now, you know, I have a great group of people from my class and St. Mary's donor base, which has helped support some of our events. We do not profit from any of our events. We believe those are the things that we do, 4 events a year, and we have 2 more left in the first part of this year. And I guess people can go to our website. We are redesigning, but right now they can go to www.4hya.org, and we do accept PayPal. And what we're really looking for funding is we want to expand. As we said, we have 65 kids in our program. We need to expand to 125 because we have a demand for that. And to continue to purchase chess boards and to purchase chess and Scrabble and to pay volunteers, definitely we have volunteers and we have paid staff as well. We're going to need to expand. That's one of our major goals in 2010 is expand our program from 65. I'd love to come on your show next year at this time and say that we are at full capacity at 125 kids because we were able to raise $40,000 this year. And that's what we're trying to do and get these kids more involved, even expand our programs to Saturday, because the more we are connecting with them, the more, Joe, that we are getting parents and we're getting peer mentors to come into in our program. We have 5 mentors from Mount Eden already. We have 2 from the Puente program at Tennyson. So we are finding that if you have a program, and the bottom line is I'm there. You know, I'm not one of those, you know, ad hoc, just run the program and write the checks and have a bunch of kids out there. I mean, you have to be there. You have to be there to direct and control the emotion and all the positive energy that needs to be there. And we go out and we find positive kids. So we want to grow to about 30 volunteers. We'll probably need 5 paid staff to get to 125 kids. And if we can get to that goal by 2010, I think then at that point we have a vehicle where every year we're churning up 125 kids in and out of the system that are starting to become self-motivated. Well, as we tell parents, if you're with me for 6 months, I haven't done my job. I mean, a lot of these programs will take a kid in from 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, and, you know, and then they're charting the behaviors. And I'm saying, no, we want change immediately. And here's the roadmap you need to go. We provide that. Here's the structure that generally works. Here's the consequences if they are all of a sudden they go left or right. Like you say, there's a consequence. If my son acts out at 4 years old, you don't have TV, period. You know, all of a sudden, you know, you got to make sure he's not acting out just so he could play Legos. It's okay for him to say, you know, that's chapter 2 of the book. But, hey, he knocks over the vase so we can play. No, son, you can just ask to play Legos. That's fine. But yeah, we can always play Legos anytime you want, son. You don't have to act out for that. But those are one of the things that you try to do is you get kids to be able to ask for what they want and to communicate. And seriously, you know, 6 months, you know, hey, this is what we want you to do. I'm not here to babysit you because you don't want them to be codependent on the nonprofit to do the parents' job. That's a very critical need. You know, we want parents to do their job. And if parents do their job and they advocate for themselves, then there's generally not a problem. It's when you don't have the parent advocating, you have the teacher, you know, just tired and not wanting to go home and not giving their at the highest expectation for the child. That's easy to happen, so it's the parent's job to advocate. And once that occurs, you'll generally find that most of your teachers out there really want to be supportive of the child. But then again, too, where we come in after school is that's the time piece. The time has to be spent between 3:30 and 7, and that's where we fill that void. But www.4hya.org is where people can donate to us, or they can donate at 1065 A Street, number 204, that's 1065 A Street, number 204, Hayward, California, 94544. And, you know, we're just getting to the point now we're looking to ask for grants. But we basically, Joe, I'd love to have 1,000 people like you on my Facebook donating $250 a year and reporting back to those 1,000 what their donations are doing. And that's where you really show a grassroots effort like what you're doing here with the technological media and the radio blog. You really get grassroots people who are family people connecting to each other. And, well, God love you, man. Hey, if you get 5,000 people and I can get $100 from 5,000 people, then everyone shares in the responsibility and a message that we really believe in. It's every day you're checking the backpack, you know, things and what's in there, and every day your teacher's signing your assignment book. If those two things were happening, there wouldn't be a problem, you know, but somehow in that communication piece, we have too many kids slipping through the cracks, and we're going to work with our 125, maybe 150, and we hope to start a model in Hayward where chess and Scrabble are in every single elementary school in the next 5 years. That's our big picture, to have every school in Hayward Elementary with a chess and Scrabble club at least 2 to 3 days a week. And we'll run ours in Hayward. Maybe we'll run two more, but we hope that other people will step up and realize with a model of what we're doing, it doesn't take that much, you know, quote-unquote funding. It just takes consistency of people's energy and time.
Right. I really, I have to say, I appreciate what you're doing with the accountability and having setting expectations, because if there's one thing that I've learned as a, I guess, a relatively recent parent, I mean, a four-year-old he's not a baby anymore, but is expectations are a huge factor. And if you don't expect certain types of appropriate behavior, you're not going to get it. And really, I respect the fact that you guys have an expectation of a six-month kind of a window. And if it's not going to happen, then maybe you guys need to spend your resources wisely somewhere else. And when
exactly,
I say that, I'm
exactly.
not trying to be mean or anything. I'm just pointing out the fact that, you know, if somebody's not going to get on board, then you have to make an impact where you can make an impact, and you don't want to get bogged down.
Well, Joe, you make a good point. I mean, codependent. They become all of us become codependent to whatever model or whatever boundary that we allow ourselves to skew. And mm-hmm. and I appreciate you seeing that, because we will be the kind that say, you know what, ma'am, if you're not picking your kid up or if you're not making sure that the homework's done, we don't want to be responsible for other people's behavior when we know what works. Okay. We know that if you do these things, generally speaking, your child will be a better student. We don't believe that every child is going to have the same level of intellect coming out of the womb by 7 or 8 years old. But that doesn't mean that every child by 8 or 9 years old cannot understand that this is what it takes for you to get to this standard. And regardless of the time that it takes, you will put the energy into the standard. And through that process of putting the energy in, you become a better person. Whether it be you take more responsibility, you'll be on time, you'll be accountable for your word, whatever the case may be. But if you don't hold the parent and the child to a certain standard, and what I say is not achievement is not really my issue. My issue is the effort that you put in every day. Did you show up? You know, is your kid late? Well, you know what? Your kid's getting a D. Well, ma'am, you know what? You had, you know, when we look at as a special education teacher trained, you know, one of our biggest issues are tardies. You know, get your kid to school on time. That's a fundamental issue that people fail. If your child is running in at the bell, your child is not prepared for school. People, and I don't think that's a political issue. I think that's real. Because if you're preparing yourself, you're also modeling in the home what it's like to prepare your child to do work.
Well, not only that, but having breakfast. You know,
hello.
Just the sometimes it's just the basic things that make a big difference. And a child's ability to focus and learn if their stomach's growling, you know, an hour after they get to school because they had some Pop-Tarts or something, you know, obviously that's not going to work. That's not going to be the best environment for them to learn. So,
and you know, and we do, and exactly right. And there's issues in school to deal with parents who have, when you're talking about kids who are hungry, you know, and you come from families that are poor, you know, schools are providing meals and opportunity for kids to eat. In that vein, on the other side, if there's an opportunity for your child to have food at school and there is a breakfast program, then your child needs to be there early in the morning to partake in that.
Right.
And those are the opposites, you know, because you don't have people want to label us as, you know, being people who are unfeeling or don't care. No, you know, I care. That's why I say these things. Because if you don't say these things, you're affecting adversely the ability for your child to learn. So, you know, we definitely get on the same page of that. I think one thing you mentioned about even as a family, you know, I got in a relationship about 10 months ago, and 10 months ago today, as a matter of fact, we met. One of the things in the beginning of the relationship, after being single for 10, 15 years, the whole notion of sitting down and having dinner, you know, she was big on that. She, you know, she's a nurse, and she sits down, and we were, and I said, you know what, this is kind of cool. I haven't done this, being a bachelor kind of guy, you know, six pack of beer and, you know, tacos, you know, whatever, the computer, I'm fine, you know, and a TV. But you know, when you get in the relationship game, you know, things change a little bit, and God directed me in that way, and I couldn't be happier. But I realized, I told her, you know, it's amazing how much I really look forward to sitting down and having dinner. You know, preparing a meal, a salad. You know, then you get into a routine where you have the salad, you have the soup, you have your one meal. You know, we're in our late 40s right now, so we're not eating as much as we used to. But just the ability to sit down and have dinner three nights a week is a big thing. And I think if we get back to that, and that's all, and I read in a book that that's part of being able in the family to decompose or deconstruct the day. That's how you kept everything in the family. A lot of old school youngsters are probably sitting there listening to us going, oh my God, all these old guys. But no, it really does matter when you sit down during the day and everybody used to get out what happened in the day. And you just didn't keep it with you. You're able to express it, and it makes a lot of sense on a very human level.
Yeah, no, I love your point about just sort of that recognition of the importance of that and how nice it is to have dinner and sit down. And we had I belong to a Rotary Club in Danville, and we had a speaker that came in and actually talked about, I guess, they had quite a few scholars from the kids that had used to come to their house and study and have dinner. And they came to find out that a lot of these scholars, a high percentage of the scholars, that was one of the things that was common, was that they had that experience where everybody sat down at the dinner table and discussed things and things like that. It just goes to show you some of these non-modern types of ideas are still tremendously important. And I think we all should be thinking about that in 2010. I've never been more social in social media in my entire life. I mean, I've never been more involved in all these different programs and websites and all that. But I will say this, I have absolutely determined that I will be even more social in person. And I will reach out to people constantly and call people, you know, on the phone. I'll try to call people every day that I haven't spoken to in a while or that I've never spoken to. And that's sort of my answer to it. You have to sort of mix in all this, what's made it work to this point already. Don't give up on those things, because those things are still tremendously important.
Well, I think one of the things that you touch on is that I think the social media outlet of the human spirit or consciousness is developed because of the mainstream media's neglect of dealing with that as people. I think the whole idea of dirty politics as a way of scaring away the middle voter, of being able to control that voting block through negativity, that just the fact that somebody would have a statistic that would study, well, you're going to lose more voters by going negative and turn them off, to me is just a sick mental game in and of itself, that somebody would actually track that, that if I can get more dirty and throw more sleeves, then I can take more of this percentage of voting block away. I think social media, and one of the things I like about your radio blog is that when you go on your blog, it's a whole ideology where you talk about an upper education, when you talk about at the professorship level that all ideas are uniquely shaped and are given the same credence equally, that there are no ideas that are looked at as negative or higher or lower than others, that they're all valued in the same. And I think social media probably does that greater, because if you look at the CNNs and the Fox News and some of all the other, we all know that they're corporately bagged, and you know, we can know who's being paid by this guy, and he's being paid to say this, and this radio host is being paid in the corporate radio. I think this is one of the true, honest mediums that people can go about their day, be able to, in a certain way, have cafe or have dinner at Joe's, if you will, and be able to express their ideas and their thoughts in an open medium where they're listened to. And then they go about the rest of their day instead of harboring all this ill will that we see in media back and forth. So that's one of the reasons why I love it. I think it allows me to connect with a lot of the friends I've had in Hayward or who I don't even see or haven't seen in 25 years. But part of that development, you know, the friends that you have in your whole life's development have shaped your experiences. I think we all kind of go my 48-year-old block, if you will, from high school of 75 to college of 83, that 8 years of people who lived in that time frame. They can connect with a certain uniqueness of spirit before we got into the mid-80s and all the kind of crazier things, just like the people both before us can kind of connect. And then the Y generation. So there's a certain commonality of experiences within blocks. And I think as we get to this social media, those people who look at numbers are saying, hey, the 75 to 83 or 77 to 85, that group of kids, they thought in a certain way. And it allows us all kind of connect. Even though we didn't go to school together, we all kind of went through life in the same way. So it's a valuable forum, and people like you bring it out. You know, I mean, I'm not Mr. Technical, I'm Mr. Ideological, you know. But and I think one of the things you talked about with kids is that when we sit with kids, please do not underestimate the power of 4 to 5 little kids, 4 through 6th grade, trying to get along for an hour. You know, I mean, he took my – no, he's cheating, Mr. Major. No, he took my thing. No, you didn't have that piece. You moved already. That's checkmate. No. And so just, you know, trying to put knuckleheads like that together and then teaching them social skills. Because one of the things that they talk about in education, when, you know, we go to the special ed school, you know, you get your regular teaching credential, you got a whole other year to go to do special ed school, which is kind of funny in of itself. How do you teach kids who don't learn as fast as the other kids? Well, you got to go a whole year to do that. Because it is social emotional, and there's a lot of emotional issues that play into learning and teaching in a pragmatic way with young kids. And some of them just have to learn that there's a tempo to education, that we teach in one style. So being able to be after school, you're giving a child extra practice at learning how to engage in a positive discourse. And being able, can we wait 2 seconds before he responds, before you jump down his throat? And so we love doing that because it's non-threatening and we're not putting penalties and consequences on kids. The only thing we care about is that they show up on time, you show up all the time, and you're there to learn. And if you're able to take instruction, you can always stay in our program. If you're not able to take instruction or be told one more than once to be quiet or sit down, then you have to go. And that's what we tell them, because we don't have to have you here. And when we set up that standard, it's amazing how many kids want to be there because it's a positive environment. But we do believe that whole ideology of sitting down and being able to have that resting moment. When do kids ever just sit down for an hour and just have nothing in front of them other than their hands and their mouths and their ears? And they have to somehow be able to engage each other. Well, we're doing it, you know, every week for about 6 or 7 hours. And we'd like to expand to more. And we're teaching because we figure if they can sit there and do this, they can sit there and write those 20 vocabulary words 5 times each. They can say them to themselves 5 times each, right? They can quiz each other 5 times each. And in over 35 minutes, they'll realize they learned 3, 4 more words they didn't really know. And through that process of learning, we do find that it does spur on the motivation, because once I get one word, I want to get 2, and then 4.
Right.
And that's where we get that doubler and tripler effect.
That's great. So, Chris, you know, one of the things that I've noticed about you is that you are an absolute spark plug. And you are a guy that makes things happen. You create energy when you walk into a room. I've seen you do it at Leadership San Ramon. I've seen you do it in the course of this interview. And I have every bit of confidence that your program is going to be a success. I have a suggestion.
Yes, sir.
My suggestion is you need to go speak as much as possible, because people are going to love what you're doing. I guarantee it.
We would love to. You know, that's one of the things that as we develop a market share, you know, we would love to be able, you know, because, Joe, you talk about how do you transform other people into transforming their lives? You know, you get all those self-help people, you know, and, you know, in the books and the tapes, and I'm not one of those guys. I truly believe that what you do it is by connecting people to each other. You know, and I think that's one of the things that we talk about in Leadership San Ramon, how we are all interconnected. You know, we did our media day, and you were right there with the radio blog, and I was all into that going, oh, Joe, that's so cool. What are you doing, youngster? You know, you're right there plugging into the computer, and I thought, my God, this is the answer to being able to get media out. And what we're trying to do, you know, we have this gentleman, Sean Kennedy from Good News in Oakland. He is going to be filming our next event February 6th. That's where we're trying to raise another $600 to feed the kids that night. We're bringing 300 kids, 150 from Tracy. We have 100 from St. Leo's, 75 from Hayward and Bowman Elementary. We're going to bring them all into the mix. They're going to tour the campus. We're going to feed them right next to Homecoming Gale Fest. It should be a crazy night for those kids with all those drunk alumni right next to them. But it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful day. Welcome to college, kids. It ain't all like it's all cracked up to be. So then we're going to go, and we're going to have some guest speakers, and we're going to go to the USF game. It's going to be a wonderful day. But we're bringing Sean Kennedy in, and he is going to videotape. You talk about energy. I think there is enough good people. And, you know, you take 20 people. I used to think you had to change 100,000. You got 25 people, you can change a whole school of 500 kids. 25 good, solid people committed to not letting children give you excuses and laughing through all of their BS and saying, no, you're going to go ahead and write the words anyway. I'm sorry about your homework, but you're going to redo it. You know, not letting them just slide. Kids are supposed to try. See, this is the biggest lie, Joe, we talk about kids, that they don't have game. Kids have game. Their game is to get out of doing as much work as possible. That's their game. And the adult's game is not letting that happen. And the more we let them get out of everything they're supposed to do and put it off on somebody else, the more we cheat our young. And if you start out with that premise, okay, this kid is going to try to do everything he can, not because he's bad, because that's what he does. That's what kids do. They're trying not to do work as they get, hey, why would I want to do work if I could sit at home and play and eat popcorn and have brownies and watch TV and cartoons?
Right.
To go to school, to be told what to do, to listen to the bell, to be there on time, to put my jacket away, don't push that kid down that I don't like. I mean, come on. I mean, nobody wants to do that. So we have to, as adults, train our children. And I think that's what we're talking about is how do we connect with each other? You know, we talk about there's four templates, anger, fear, frustration, manipulation. And we figure out which one of those things is breaking down that creates that bad communication. You know, is it the anger that I have to work too many hours? Is it the anger that his dad's not around? Is it the fear that I'm not going to be able to provide or the frustration that my kid thinks I'm a jerk because I'm coming home drunk every other night? Well, we got to deal with all those issues. You know, is it the kid saying is it manipulation? You know, I can come home because I know my mom is tired and, you know, my boyfriend don't care and I don't like him anyway, so I'm going to create frustration between those two, so I'm not going to do my homework. Well, in the process of when you're dealing with after-school programs, you get to those really just kind of lightweight stuff, but when you get to that serious kind of issue, well, my mom's boyfriend, he comes home and I don't like it when he's there and he's always, okay, well, that's a problem. When is he there? Well, I come home, he's always there, and that's why you don't do your homework. Well, yeah, and so that's a way. So we communicate, and we let mom know. Now, we can't change the situation, but we identify it, and then we find alternative ways that the kid can do the homework before he goes home. Or is there somewhere else you can go? So we try to empower everyone in whatever position they're in the hierarchy of decision-making, and sometimes the child is left with some bad situations. We know that. But when we start talking about those situations, we try to empower the child to say, yeah, it sucks, but what are we going to do? We're going to cry and let it crumble. We're going to create the next generation. And sometimes kids have to grow up earlier than we want them to. And for those homes that things are going great, God bless you. You know, taking a kid to help him do some homework at night. It might be the greatest thing you can do is let a kid stay at your house for 2 hours to do the homework before he has to go home. I mean, you know, those kinds of little community things work, and that's what we're going to try to do in the San Ramon Valley after our leadership class is over. We're going to try to find one program that we could run for a year, and maybe we'll do it with Kevin's church, you know, someplace that's running out of a school, and we're going to start a chess program, and we're going to track and see the results and see how it works. And just on the social-emotional attitude part of it, to give a kid a place to come, just to be a kid and just to be able to let that release out, because maybe dinner is not being served at home. Maybe chess is being served after school, and that's a way for kids to kind of settle their mind, settle their day, so they can begin their academic life, and that's to do their homework. So we're trying to provide all of those little old-school cultural things within the school between 3 and 7, and this is a great vehicle to start doing that on a more intense basis, and that's for sure.
Wow. Well, Chris, I have to say I really admire what you're doing, and I really appreciate you coming on tonight and telling me more, because I needed to know more about what you do.
Thank you.
when I'm having conversations with people, I'll be more informed and I'll be better prepared to encourage people to support you and see if we can make a difference.
Well, I tell you what, we're looking at keeping our budget. Right now we operate on a yearly budget of $75,000. We're trying to impact 150 kids at least 3 times a week. And what we're saying is, for that, what we're looking at is getting every single kid in our program within a 6 months to a year span to a point where they start addressing their issues, they start working together, and you change. Once again, people say, how do you transform kids? One person asked me, we don't see how chess transforms kids. I said, well, that chess doesn't transform kids. It's the people that are involved on a daily basis that sees these children wanting to be successful. When these kids see that these adults are invested, and I've got 5 young ladies. You talk about speaking. I'd love to go out and speak more. I went out and spoke for Ed Mullins, who was a mentorship program in Hayward, and it was under a program called Choices, and it was originally out of Seattle. And we went in there, and we just talked to a 9th grade English class. I think the mayor of Hayward, Mayor Sweeney, and City Councilman Anna May, and Phyllis Moronia, one of the leaders of Hayward, were out there, and we all spoke in different days at all the high schools in Hayward. Well, I went to Mrs. Koning's class at Mount Eden High School. And from those 2 days and just talking about it, and this is where I'm starting, Joe. This is like you say about speaking. I started realizing more. You know what? You can send this message out and people will respond. 5 young ladies responded. And
wow.
I'll tell you what. I showed up for Scrabble the first week. Mr. Mouth, right? Mr. Consciousness here. And I got 26 kids in class. And I'm like, oh, God.
Wow.
And I don't know much about Scrabble. I got my girlfriend with me. I got the principal and one other person. And I'm like, how am I going to teach? These kids don't know anything about Scrabble. They're just there. And I'm like, why are you guys here? Well, they said you had a Scrabble club. And we couldn't get in the chess club. I said, okay. So they're here because they want to be in. So I started boning up on Scrabble, called up a couple of the young ladies who had shown some interest. The next week, all 5 of them showed up.
Wow.
Now,
that's awesome.
I was able to sit them each at a table of 4. Each of them now has their own group of young ladies. I have the 12 little guys in the back that I have to work with. Those are my boys. But you know what I mean? You isolate those that are ready to learn now, and you separate the ones, and then we work on the other skills later with the other guys. But these young ladies will be able to take these kids, these 20, I think they've got about 16, and they will be able to take these 16 to 20, and I'll take the 8 to 12. And between myself and the next 6 months, we'll improve reading scores at Bowman because we have the 55 critical kids that we need. Mrs. Rivera, the principal, has identified them. And we're tracking these kids, and we're hoping by the best scores next September, we can really start to say, hey, we have made a difference. So that's what we're looking to do. We're excited about it. And being on a show like yours, Joe, really gives us more outreach to a different market. And we know that there's people out there that support these kind of efforts because it's not going to cost them a lot. But they truly, truly know that where their money is being spent, it's being spent in a good way. And that's teaching values and determination and hard work and independence. And that's what Avery Youth Academy is about.
And one last time for our listeners here, since we're coming to the end of our show.
It's a fast hour. Yeah.
The web address is 4hya.org. There's a donate tab there. There's also an email link. And does that email go to you?
Yes, it does. As soon as if there is a donation made, it immediately gives me a verification of that. And like I say, I'm getting new to this electronic media. Anything anyone wants to support, like I say, we're not out there. Our goal is to get 1,000 donors at $250. And if we do that, we know that there's people out there in each of the communities that's contributing to their own community. And I think more people doing a little is really how we're going to change it. And I like this social media outlet as a way of doing it. And that way you're not beholden to people. I don't want to be bought and sold, Joe. You know that. Nobody wants to have other people gearing up politically for you to say this or say that. We want each kid to be an individual. And for us to do that, we need a cross-cultural grassroots support effort. And that's where we're at. That's really what we're asking for.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more there, and I actually have some suggestions that I'm going to give you offline on some people that I would recommend that you reach out to.
Oh, my, that would be, Joe, anything you could do would be great.
You bet. So, Chris, I want to thank you again very much for coming on. It's really enjoyable, as always, speaking with you. And, again, for anyone that's listening that would like to support the Hayward Youth Academy, you can go to 4HYA.org. I want to thank everyone for listening, and you guys have a great day. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Joe, and you have a good evening.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.